We're glad to see all those that made it back to be with us again this evening. I ask you to be turning your Bibles with me to Deuteronomy chapter 34. Deuteronomy chapter 34. And we'll be getting there here in just a moment. I don't care how many times I sit down to study the man Moses, I always learn something new or something else pops out at me, and I go and I study about that for a little while. Many different things we can learn about the man Moses and from the man Moses. Oftentimes when we think about Moses, we think about all the positive aspects of his life. Moses was not a perfect man. Even early in his life, we see Moses acting before God is ready for him to act when he's 40 years old and he kills the Egyptian. It seems maybe that Moses had knew that something, that he was supposed to do something great, that God was going to use him possibly to deliver Israel, but it wasn't the right time. And so he committed murder. And then we see Moses, even as he's 80, God tells him to go back down into Egypt and meet there with Pharaoh and use his brother Aaron as his mouthpiece. But before he can even get there, he's struck with a sickness. And the Bible even tells us that God was striving to kill Moses because he had not followed his law in circumcising his children. But then something else that really jumped out at me happens in Deuteronomy chapter 34. In Deuteronomy chapter 34, Deuteronomy, of course, is basically, it means the second law. It's just the second telling of the law, the second delivering of the law of Moses. In Deuteronomy chapter 34, beginning in verse 1, we read of something that happens at the end of Moses' life. We read that Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo to the top of Pisgah, which is across from Jericho, and the Lord showed him all the land of Gilead as far as Dan. All Naphtali and the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, all the land of Judah as far as the western sea, the south and the plain of the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees as far as Zoar. Then the Lord said to him, "This is the land of which I swore to give Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I have caused you to see it with your eyes, but you shall not cross over there." So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord, and he buried him in a valley in the land of Moab, opposite Beth Peor, but no one knows his grave to this day. Friends, the statement made in verse 4 is what hit me. And it hit me, as the saying goes, right between the eyes. You read there in verse 4 of chapter 34, "Then the Lord said to him, this is the land which I swore to give Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants." So God says, I've already given them this land. And I'm letting you see it. Now, remember how old Moses is at this period of time. He's an old man. Full of years. And something else that really stuck with me as I studied this particular passage is that as he's there on the mountain, God gives him a panoramic view. Now think again of his age. His eyes must have been dim at that time. But I can imagine God in his infinite wisdom and infinite power at this time gives Moses clear vision. And Moses is able to see in its entirety and in its fullness everything that he's going to miss out on because he's not going to be allowed to cross the River Jordan. I want you to think about it. In the New King James it says, "But you shall not cross over there." Think about that statement though. Thou shalt not go over thither. You shall not cross over there. Moses, here it is. This is what I promised. This is what you have lived your life for. This is what you have led them out of Egypt for. This is everything that you have endured, the 40 years spent in the wilderness. It all led to this. But you will not go over. Friends, there is a mountain of lessons, or however you want to say that, right here in this verse that we can take home for Moses. But consider with me some things, and we'll get to the application of it here in just a moment. Consider the entirety of the life of Moses, everything that he had done. Moses is brought, or God uses Moses, God through His providence brought His people down into Egypt to make them a great nation. If you've been listening on Monday mornings, that's what we've been talking about on our radio show. We've gone through the book of Genesis, and at the end of the book of Genesis, God has led His people down into Egypt. And there are a myriad of purposes for that, but the big purpose is to grow them as a nation untainted from the rest of the world. You look at the acts of Judah, you look at Simeon and Reuben and the things that they had done already in the land of Canaan before they go down into Egypt, and you can already begin to see them beginning to be corrupted by the people that are there. So God, to preserve His nation, sends them or takes them down into Egypt. Now Egypt, if you've been listening, you understand, they did not like shepherds or herdsmen. As a matter of fact, they loathed them. This is part of God's plan. By sending them down there, they would not intermarry with idol worshippers, but the nation would grow. And then through the adversity after their Pharaoh rose that would not know Joseph, you have then this adversity that would bring them closer together. You see a family oftentimes, or a group of people, that are persecuted to no end. One of two things is going to happen. They're going to split and go their different ways, or they're going to become even more close-knit. They're going to get closer. They're going to get stronger. And the second of those is what happened with Israel. They grew closer together. They fortified themselves against these things, and then with these plagues that God had brought upon Egypt, had brought them even closer together. And then we see them there again, as we talked about this morning at the Red Sea. Now through His providence, sending Joseph down first, He's brought them into Egypt to make of them a nation. Genesis 46 and verse 3 says, "And He said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt." You see, Jacob had a little bit of trepidation about going down there. God reassures him, "Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation." Jacob then takes his family. They were well received there. Following the death of Joseph, it said of the Israelites, and the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly and multiplied and waxed exceeding mighty, and the land was filled with them. Exodus 1 and verse 7. As a matter of fact, in the book of Exodus, what we find happening when this particular Pharaoh decrees that the midwives are to take any man-child that is born and cast them into the river, Pharaoh actually makes a statement there that leads us to believe that the Israelite population had actually grown to exceed the Egyptian population. They were greater in number than the Egyptians themselves. But they didn't have the weapons of war in order to fight their own rebellion. Hence you see God fighting for them. Now, we talked about Exodus 1 and verse 8. In that time, a new king arose in Egypt and knew not Joseph. This new king, as we just talked about, set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens. Another king arose which knew not Joseph. The same dealt subtly with all our kindred and evil entreated our father so that they cast out their young children to the end they might not live. Now that's Stephen speaking in Acts 7, 18 and 19, reminding the Jewish people of everything that they had endured there. All this taking place, their affliction, their being taken into bondage, was fulfillment of prophecy. All the way back in the book of Genesis, chapter 15, 13, and 14, God said to Abram, and He said unto Abram, "Know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge. And afterward they shall come out with great substance." Now they were actually in servitude for about 150 to 200 years. But the entirety of their time in the land of Egypt was 400. As God had prophesied unto Abram. Now in the fullness of time, Moses is born.
And he's born into the right parents.
Hid him for 6 months and then placed him in an ark of bulrushes, and he's found and raised in the household of Pharaoh's daughter. Now, he's raised up in this palace of the Egyptian king. Acts 7 and verse 22, again Stephen speaking. He speaks of Moses, and he says of Moses, he was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in words and in deeds. Now with that in mind, let's turn to Acts chapter 7. Acts chapter 7. And I want you to pick up reading with me in verse 23. Now listen to Stephen as he describes Moses and really the entirety of the life of Moses. Now when he was 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended and avenged him who was oppressed and struck down the Egyptian. For he supposed that his brethren would have understood that God would deliver them by his hand, but they did not understand. And the next day he appeared to two of them as they were fighting and tried to reconcile them, saying, "Men, you are brethren. Why do you wrong one another?" But he who did his neighbor wrong pushed him away, saying, "Who made you a ruler and a judge over us? Do you want to kill me as you did the Egyptian yesterday?" Then at this saying, Moses fled and became a dweller in the land of Midian, where he had two sons. And when 40 years had passed, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire in a bush in the wilderness of Mount Sinai. When Moses saw it, he marveled at the sight, and as he drew near to observe, the voice of the Lord came to him, saying, "I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses trembled and dared not look. And the Lord said to him, "Take your sandals off your feet, for the place where you stand is holy ground. I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their groaning and have come down to deliver them. And now come, I will send you to Egypt. This Moses, whom they rejected, saying, 'Who made you a ruler and a judge?' is the one that God sent to be a ruler and deliverer by the hand of the angel who appeared to him in the bush. He brought them out after he had shown wonders and signs in the land of Egypt and in the Red Sea and in the wilderness 40 years. This is the Moses who said to the children of Israel, 'The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brethren. Him shall you hear,'" or "you shall hear. 'This is he who was in the congregation of the wilderness with the angel who spoke to him on Mount Sinai with our fathers, the one who received the living oracles to give us.'" Friends, this is the same Moses that had done all these mighty deeds that Stephen just recites of him here, but he was not allowed to enter into the promised land. And we read Deuteronomy 34, 1-6. What happened, though, for God to utter those words in verse 4 to this great man Moses? Let's go back a couple of chapters to Deuteronomy chapter 32. Begin reading with me in verse 48. The Lord spoke to Moses that very same day, saying, "Go up this mountain of the Mount Nebo, which is in the land of Moab, across from Jericho, view the land of Canaan, which I give to the children of Israel as a possession. And die on the mountain which you ascend, and be gathered to your people, just as Aaron your brother died on Mount Hor, and was gathered to his people. Because you trespassed against me among the children of Israel at the waters of Meribah Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin, because you did not hallow me in the midst of the children of Israel. Yet you shall see the land before you, though you shall not go there into the land which I am giving to the children of Israel." What had he done? God simply says to Moses, "You have trespassed against me. You have not hallowed me in their midst. And because of this, God says, you shall not go over. Thou shalt not go thither." So friends, what lessons can we learn from this man in this particular instance? Now, friends, think of it like this. Even as God provided a promised land for Israel of old, he has provided for spiritual Israel. He's provided for you and I, Galatians 6 and verse 16. the promised land of heaven. Now friends, there are three very important lessons here that we should learn and hold near to us as they relate to Moses not entering into the promised land. Number one, as we strive to apply this, and friends, I want us to remember this and apply it personally. Okay? And again, as we did last week, let me offer again a personal challenge, if you will. Let's make personal application and understand that God, remember everything that Moses has done, God is no respecter of persons when it comes to sin. Friends, Moses had led God's people out of bondage and through the wilderness. Moses had served as the mediator of God's covenant with Israel, Galatians 3 and verse 19. Moses had made the tabernacle according to the pattern shown him in the Holy Mount. He had done all these things right. He had built the tabernacle just as Noah had built the ark exactly to God's specifications. That's what Moses did with the tabernacle. Just as God had commanded him to go before Pharaoh, that's what Moses did. He told him to go across the Red Sea, that's what Moses did. He went up into the mountain, and that's what Moses did. But friends, God is no respecter. We can do all these things right. And yet one thing can cause us to keep from going over. To keep God from welcoming us in. Moses was faithful to God in all his house, Hebrews 3 and verse 4. Yet there was a blemish on his record. Friend, God will not allow sin in the camp. God will not allow sin to enter heaven. God can't be in its presence. He will not be in its presence. Regardless of race, regardless of gender, regardless of station, God will not allow sin to enter into the promised land of heaven. Any that trespass against Him, who acts unfaithfully against the laws of God and does not repent, God will say to him, Jesus will say to him, depart from me, I never knew you. Friend, whether president of the USA, whether CEO of a major company, an elder, a deacon, a preacher, a Bible class teacher, you could have baptized 10,000 people. One who enters into eternity having acted unfaithfully against God will not enter into the promised land of heaven. Plain and simple. God is no respecter of persons when it comes to sin. Number two. You think about Moses. There in chapter 34. He's up on this mountain. And he looks everywhere that God tells him to look, and he sees what God has promised. He's able to see the land that flows with milk and honey. I imagine in my mind's eye, as Moses is standing there, the tears pouring down his face as he looks upon those rich fields and vineyards, as he looks upon the cities that his sons and daughters will now be able, and granddaughters and grandsons will be able to dwell in, and he's not going to be able to be there with them. Friends, can you imagine living 120 years? Having been told, I mean, he's in Pharaoh's house, but he's raised until he's about anywhere from 8 to 12 years old by his mother. He's been told in those formative years about God's plan, as Stephen alludes to in Acts chapter 7. He's been told that he's going to be the one to take them in, that he's going to be the one to lead them as God would direct him. He's done all these great things. I mean, you've got a laundry list of everything that Moses has accomplished in his life. But because he trespassed against God and he sanctified God not in the midst of the children of Israel, God says, thou shalt not go over thither.
Friends, let me ask you this.
And I don't know what judgment is going to be like. And to be honest with you, I don't know where it's going to be. I just know it's going to be before the judgment seat of Christ. And whether that's in heaven or in the land in between, if you will, I don't know where it's going to be. But friends, think about this. What if it's like Moses? Okay, do we want to sit in the judgment room, or if it is in the room, maybe it's out in the open, I don't know, but we can see here in the judgment scene, we can look at over here, we can see heaven. We can see the gates. We can see the pearly gates. We can see the golden streets. We can see the mansions that Jesus has spent so much time now in preparing for you and for me. If we remain faithful. But we're sitting there at the judgment seat and our name is called. And God says, see, here's the land that I have promised to my children. But you shall not go over thither. Can you imagine? Being able to see the promised land and then be denied entrance. Deuteronomy chapter 34 and verse 4. Again, look at that verse, friends, and let that sink in. He tells Moses, you see it. Here is the land. I have caused you to see it with your eyes, but you shall not cross over there. Thou shalt not go over thither. Now friend, again, with that in mind, and we're letting this sink in, imagine on judgment day, you see the pearly city. You see those streets of gold. You see the mansions in the Father's house. You see the inheritance that is prepared for the faithful, the saints being received, and to be told, thou shalt not go over thither. Can't imagine. I don't want to think about it. To be that close. To have it within my grasp. Moses had it within his grasp. And he made the choice to let it slip away. Number three. God is no respecter of persons when it comes to sin. I don't want to see the promised land and then be denied entrance. Number three. Will God's people know where you are in eternity? Notice again, verse 6, Deuteronomy chapter 34. And he buried him in a valley. In the land of Moab, opposite Beth Peor, but no one knows his grave to this day. Friends, you think about that particular verse. Moses died in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. Back in chapter 32, he's already been told he's going to die on that mountain. Going to be gathered to his people. We're told the general area, but we don't know the grave. Don't know where. Moses' body remained there in that land of Moab. Friends, if you study the people of Moab, this was a nation out of that unholy union between Lot and one of his daughters. And they began, and as that nation grew, they were a thorn in the side of the people of Israel. They were not God's people. Now understand that Moses' spirit went to paradise. He went to be in Abraham's bosom. And I know that because otherwise he would not have been one of the three to speak with Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration. But friends, in a manner of speaking, how would you like Moses How would you like to be left in a land that does not belong to God? He was left in the land of Moab. Who wants to spend eternity in Moab with the enemies of God just short of the promised land? Friends, I have to believe, as you read Luke 16, as we've been studying the devil, sin, and hell in our Bible classes, I have to believe that part of the torment, part of the agony that is experienced in torments there in Tartarus, I have to believe that part of it is that I can look across, hopefully not I, but the rich man, can look across that gulf and see the glory that Lazarus is able to experience. And the memories, as Abraham calls them to remembrance, that in life he had gotten his good things and Lazarus his evil. Again, friends, notice that no man knoweth his sepulchre, no man knows of his grave unto this day. Moses' grave has never been discovered. Friends, if lost in eternity, and let this sink in again as we want to make this personally and make it personal to yourself. If lost in eternity, if I were to go to hell, if God were to say to me, you shall not go over there. You shall not cross over. But He says to Ashley and to Jensen, Lord willing to Uriah, well done, a good and faithful servant. Because I believe with all my heart what God says, there shall be no tears over there. There's only going to be happiness. There will be no sorrow. If God says to me, you shall not cross over, they won't know where I am in eternity. I will never be discovered. But as Moses' body is, I will forever be lost. Friends, if we think truly about these things, that God is no respecter of persons when it comes to sin, that I don't want to see the promised land and then be denied entrance. And I don't want to spend eternity in the land of Moab. If we will make those things personal, friends, I believe that we can live and shine our lights all that much brighter in San Angelo, Texas. There are many things that we can learn from Moses, friends, but like I said, this is one that struck me right between the eyes, and I hope it does you. As we close our Bibles, and we take out our psalm books, being ready to sing the invitation song here in just a moment, consider these things again with me. Again, God is no respecter of persons pertaining to sin and salvation, but He will reward, friend. He will reward every man according to his works. Romans 2 and verse 11, Colossians 3, 24 and 25, and Revelation 20, 12 and 13. Friend, one who enters into eternity guilty of trespasses against God, he cannot enter the promised land. To see heaven will not be enough. I want to be there. I want to take my shoes off on the streets of gold. I want to open the door of my mansion. And I want to sing praises to my Lord. Friends, I cannot imagine. If Jesus has spent all this time preparing a place for His people, we are some 2,000 years removed from His death, burial, and resurrection. And He told His disciples then that I go to prepare a place for you. If He has spent 2,000 years preparing this place for His people, I cannot imagine how glorious it must be. I want to be there. I don't want to just see it. I want to experience it. Will you go with me? Will you go with me? And friends, if we truly want to experience it,
and we want others to go with us, then we'll tell them about it.
We'll tell them how to get there. And we'll not stop short ourselves. And friends, to be lost from the presence of God and the fellowship of the saved, that indeed will be an eternity of punishment. So I ask the question of, again, do you want to go to the promised land of heaven? Friends, only those that are children of God, only those that believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, only those that repent, confess, and are baptized, immersed in water for the forgiveness of sins, have the hope of heaven. Do you want that hope? Have you had that hope, but you lost it? Regain it tonight. Friend, if you are subject to the Lord's invitation, let's learn from Moses. And let's strive to hear our God say, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." Friend, if you would hear those words, if you would obey the gospel, if you are subject to the Lord's invitation, we ask you to come while we stand. While we sing.